U.S. Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross had a tough road ahead of him when he headed to China to try to see how the U.S. and China could avoid a trade war and reduce the deficit between themselves. But then he was thrown a curveball, one that took both him and China by surprise. The U.S. suddenly announced the possibility of slapping $50 billion more in tariffs on Chinese products. Now, in this debate, we're going to take a look at what has been described as a U.S. now almost trademark flip-flopping on its approaches and see how this has extended to other arenas, like when it comes to the EU or even NAFTA trade agreements.
In Beijing, the Chinese government reacted forcefully to escalating U.S. threats of a trade war. Foreign Ministry spokeswoman Hua Chunying spoke to reporters ahead of a visit by U.S. Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross and a day after the Trump administration said it would go ahead with 25% tariffs on $50 billion of Chinese imports.
China does not want a trade war, but is not afraid of one either. We will take whatever measures are called for. If America is bent on headstrong and reckless behavior, we will have no choice but to take resolute and forceful measures to protect our legitimate interests.
10 days earlier, after negotiations in Washington, a joint statement seemed to indicate that both sides had agreed on how to narrow China's $375 billion trade surplus. But no numbers were agreed on, prompting critics of President Trump to call him weak.
The products America is targeting are from high-tech industries that China wants to develop using what the U.S. says is unfair government support. They include semiconductors, electric vehicles, and advanced medical products. Cheaper consumer goods, such as clothes, shoes, and toys, are being left untouched.
Some analysts say America's change of heart may be a reflection of Trump's fickle personality, differing opinions amongst his advisors on how to deal with China, or even just a tactical move to force more concessions ahead of the Commerce Secretary's visit. Others, however, say serious disagreement is inevitable, given that China's achievements in high tech have eroded the complementary nature of the two big economies.
In the early years after China opened its economy, our exports to America were labor-intensive, low-value-added products. But now we are committing ourselves to research and development in technology, and the U.S. feels like its monopoly in this sphere is under threat. The aim of these tariffs is to weaken the speed and the strength of our development of high-tech.
Wilbur Ross will arrive on June the 2nd for further bilateral talks over trade issues. Stephen Rebe, Press TV. Beijing.
Our guest joining us for this edition of the debate, we have Sean O'Grady, finance editor at The Independent, who joins us from London. We also have Mike Harris, finance editor at Veterans Today, who joins us from Phoenix. Gentlemen, welcome. Sean O'Grady, let me first start with you. This is seen as a curveball somewhat, this what is called a surprise U.S. announcement. Do you see it as it being a surprise when it comes to the receiver, which is China?
Well, I think I'd repeat or echo what the Chinese said about it today, which is that it's a surprise but not a shock. In other words, we all knew this was coming, is more or less. It's been telegraphed for quite some time, and it was one of Donald Trump's big campaign issues in the presidential election, which got him into power, and he's very proud of keeping his promises. So we knew it was coming. Having said that, I think his Treasury Secretary, Steve Mnuchin, said the other day that the trade issue was on hold. So you couldn't be sure of the timing, and you can't also be quite sure about why Mr. Trump has decided to do it right now when his Commerce Secretary is just going to talk to the Chinese, I think, at the weekend. So, yeah, it's not such an enormous shock to people, but we'll see if it holds.
So why don't you tell us, Mike Harris, what Donald Trump is thinking, assuming that he's the one who obviously made a decision to make this announcement. Do you think that there's a game plan there involved in terms of having some sort of leverage over China?
Well, yes, I think there is. What Trump is trying to undo is the damage by the treason that was committed against the American people back with the passage of NAFTA, GATT, and allowing China into the WTO. You watch the systematic flood of U.S. industries leaving the shores of the United States, and in particular, I'm going to talk about semiconductors. In 1998, in the city I'm in right here, Phoenix, Arizona, Motorola employed over 28,000 people in the semiconductor sector. At the time, Motorola was the number two producer of semiconductors, both in dollar volume and unit volume globally. Today, Motorola is shut down and is no longer in that industry. Those jobs have all gone to China. We do not have a tech industry in this country anymore. There are a few design centers that linger around, but the Motorola presence in this valley, which was 28,000 people, is zero. Those jobs are gone. They all went to China. And I think what Trump is trying to do is bring these industries, well, first of all, not lose any more ground on the few strategic advantages that the U.S. has in the semiconductor industry, and two, bring back the state-of-the-art of semiconductor manufacturing back into the U.S., because the Chinese have proven themselves to be unreliable manufacturing partners.
Well, let's see. Sean O'Grady, I'm going to use Mike Harris's word, and he said that there's a treason that was being done against the U.S. from China, because I think I saw a reaction from you, Sean O'Grady, when he used that word.
Yeah.
Well, it's a very strong word. It was a treason by the U.S. government.
Oh, by the U.S. government. I'm sorry. Sean O'Grady, go ahead. I apologize. I corrected myself.
Yeah. Well, I understand that. Well, it's a very strong word. I never thought that George W. Bush or Clinton or Obama were traitors to America, really. I think they're patriotic men who thought they were doing the right thing for their country. They might have been wrong. I happen to think they were probably right on balance, because opening up trade, reducing tariffs, taking away barriers, economic dynamic change, that's something that the world has had to get used to under globalization, and indeed before, under previous rounds of trade liberalization since the Second World War. And it has made the world as a whole, and most countries, most of the time, for most of the people, it has made them more prosperous in traditional economic orthodoxy. That's what happens when you open up trade. You have countries, industries specializing, some move, some jobs are lost, other jobs are created. It's dynamic. You can't have a world where every industry stays pickled in a jar for decade upon decade, century upon century. Otherwise, there would be no economic change. No production would move anywhere. No industries, no services would move anywhere. And we saw what happened before the Second World War in the world economy. Countries were fearful, as they are now. They introduced many more trade barriers. There were trade wars all over the place. And the net result of it was that everybody got poorer, the world became a less safe and a less prosperous place, and some grim consequences followed from that. So it's bad. What Donald Trump is doing at the moment is bad. The only note of optimism you could possibly have is that it's tactics. So it's a Trump thing where he says something one day and then he says something different the next week, or he ramps up the tension ahead of talks. I don't know. I can't hope to guess what's going on in his mind. He's supposed to be the great deal maker. Well, we shall see. But apart from that, it's a pretty bad policy generally to protectionism. Always has been, always will be.
Well, one of the things, Mike Harris, that Trump has been criticized for is his flip-flopping of some of his approaches. In particular, when it comes to China, one of the things that stood out was how during his campaign trail he talked about the China being a currency manipulator, and then there was a visit that was made by Xi Jinping to I think it was his mansion in Florida, where he then said, no, he's not, China's not a currency manipulator. In this case, China's accusing again Trump of this with the $50 billion. Do you hold Trump at fault for the way that he's approached China, and also do you think that at the same time that this is a style that he has, that perhaps there's some, I'm sorry to say, method to the madness?
Well, I think there is a method to the madness on how he negotiates, and that is he prides himself on being unpredictable. That's one issue, but I do have to address my colleague's previous comment about globalism. Now, globalism is another way of the banking system spreading its tentacles and extending everywhere. There are those of us, Donald Trump included, who wish to see our country succeed. We don't want to lose our jobs in order to make some other country more prosperous. That's what Bill Clinton did to us. That's what the whole passage of letting China into the GATT and the World Trade Organization, this whole NAFTA business. All of these things lessened America's prosperity, the prosperity of our people, my people. I don't care what China does. Let them, they've got 1.2 billion people. They have more than enough to consume whatever industry they produce internally. But what they're doing is they're asset stripping the United States. We cannot afford to run $350 to $500 billion trade deficits with one country year in, year out. We have another trade deficit that's going on with Mexico for $100 billion a year and another $150 billion a year that's going off to Europe. We're not carrying our own weight. Trade should be, if we're going to have trade, let's have it balanced so that what we sell is equal to what we buy. And we're completely out of equilibrium on this now, and the result is an asset stripping of American wealth going to other countries, going to China in this case, and going to Mexico and the EU. And I applaud Trump for addressing these issues.
Asset stripping, Sean O'Grady, do you agree?
No, of course not. In the first place, there is no reason why, if you can make a car cheaper, that's just as good, or the quality's okay, according to the Ford Motor Company or General Motors or Volkswagen, and you can make that car in Mexico, and it's cheaper for the American consumer, the consumer interest here is important, you could save some thousands of dollars. What's wrong with that? It's bad news for the people who make cars in the United States, but that means that those people should be helped to find other work, maybe in other places even. But that's economic change. That's a dynamic economy. That's a market economy. It always has been like that, and it will continue to be like that. Otherwise, you'll end up like North Korea or something, or the old Soviet Union, where you know, the politicians make decisions about what is made, where it's made, and at what cost, and so forth, but bear no relation to what consumers want. It's consumers are driving this issue. And as I say, if you can get the same goods from elsewhere, and you can do it cheaper, that's an enormous benefit to the consumer. It's not asset stripping at all. And if you introduce a tariff or a protectionist policy against the Chinese, shall we say, that means that if you hold everything else equal, the Chinese will then have less money, less income to spend on what they do buy from the United States of America, and what they do buy from Europe, what they do buy from Australia. It will cut jobs in China. It will cut jobs in Australia. It will actually cut jobs in America if you reduce, you know, imports from the United States, as I say. And then you have this tit for tat, you have this cycle where both economies go into a decline. And that's the lesson of history. And as I say, it is very difficult to accept economic change if you're on the sharp end of it. Absolutely, of course it is. Mm-hmm. And maybe if I was in one of those towns, I'd vote for Trump as well. But you would also realize that the people in those towns, their clothes that they get from China or Bangladesh, for example, the cars that they get from Mexico, the electronics they get from Taiwan, all of these things, these raise their standard of living because they are cheaper, they are better, they're more technologically advanced. If America wants to solve its trade deficit, America needs to be more competitive. It needs to produce things that the world wishes to buy of its own free will. Now, I don't deny that the Chinese have engaged in some sharp practice in the past. And that would include, in my opinion, currency manipulation. But at the end of the day, if there's a good reason why China exports so easily to the rest of the world, and that's because it's got an awful lot of people, the wages are extremely low, therefore, and people across the world want to buy their shirts, their toothpaste, dog food, I think goes to America, everything else, motor cars as well now. So that's what's going on right in the world economy, and it's a good thing overall in the long run.
Okay. Well, we need to address this intellectual property theft that China has been accused of, Mike Harris. And correct me if I'm wrong, the understanding that I have from this is the fact that for American companies to get access to the Chinese market of whatever, over 1 billion people, they need to give up some of their intellectual property, I guess, behind the technology that they're using. And in exchange, that market is open to them. Is that so? It's not like the American CEOs and the companies, are their arms are being twisted. They're agreeing to that. Isn't that correct?
Well, that's absolutely true. I had a meeting with the then chairman of the board of Motorola back before they built their first factory in China. And I warned him that within 2 years, they're going to have your intellectual property. Within 5 years, they're going to own the factory. Guess who owns the factory? It's owned by a company called CIMIC. It's a Chinese factory now. It's no longer an American factory. And it's part of an insidious plan that the Chinese have to expropriate as much American intellectual property as possible. In addition to which, the efforts that they make on the ground here in the USA to buy startup companies, to hire the best and brightest out of our schools, and to take the knowledge and the intellectual property that is currently being developed, the cutting edge stuff, China's actively involved in this. In addition to which, there is a lot of internet theft, where if you have a design center in Wichita, Kansas, and you're sending your drawings, your CAD CAM drawings for your new design to another place, it's very frequently intercepted and it's stolen off the internet and the Chinese lift it. This has happened time and time and time again. The Chinese are very guilty of this. In addition, I'll go back to the treason that was committed against the American people by the Clinton administration when they allowed China admission into the GATT and in the WTO. And that is, we gave China access to the entire U.S. patent portfolio, the entire thing. We gave it away for nothing as a condition of their membership. And they have continued to exploit this. This gives them a tremendous, tremendous economic advantage because they don't have to spend money on R&D. They don't have to invest millions of dollars into a project that may not work. They don't have to take that risk. They merely cherry pick the ones that the Americans producers have already determined are going to be winning projects. They expropriate them as their own. They cut the cost and they put the Americans out of business. Mm-hmm. I watched this with U.S. televisions. We used to make them in this country. Semiconductors we used to make in this country. Cell phones we used to make in this country. None of that's made in the country any longer.
Okay.
My fellow colleague on the show talks about Chinese workers being low wages. The Apple computer factory over there has 35 suicides a week because the people are paid so little and work so hard that the Apple factories had to put nets out there so the people wouldn't fall to their death when they jump out the windows. I don't want to see that happen to the American people. I don't want to see it happen to the British people, but that's how the Chinese system works. Don't forget, China is still a communist country with a communist work ethic, and they don't care about workers' rights. They don't care about any of that. American workers will never be able to compete with that in spite of the pressure of illegal immigration driving our wages down and our factories going offshore.
Very well. You raised so many good points there, Mike Harris, that I could take three topics out of there and have three debates on it, but we just don't have the time. So, Sean O'Grady, I got to address the EU with you, and I got to ask you at this point, you know, you have China, you have Russia, you have the EU, of which Trump, when it comes to Russia, sanctioning Russia, when it comes to China, well, this is what we're talking about. And when it comes to the EU, we're talking about the tariffs that they're supposed to, I guess, it's going to expire on Friday, the tariffs that they want to slap on the EU, whether Trump is going to continue or not. It just sounds like it's Trump against the world. How do you see this happening? What do you see Trump's approach here? Do you think he's going to be successful when it comes to these areas, especially with the EU in this question?
Well, kind of is the answer to that. I mean, there's only so much you can do, and you end up in a difficult position because once you start retaliating, if Trump does impose the tariffs on steel and aluminium exports from European Union countries, including Britain. If he does that, then the question is, does the European Union put tariffs on Harley-Davidson motorbikes, which we've talked about doing, or certain other famous American products? And we could do that. The Europeans could do that. They'd be perfectly entitled to. But you will end up depriving our consumers of wonderful American products, and why would we want to do that? It would be much better if we could talk about reducing Europe's sometimes quite high tariffs on American goods, especially on agricultural produce, for example. That would be a good idea. But retaliation would be a bad idea. But Trump stopping European steel going into American, we're not a low-wage economy, by the way, that would not be good for America, and not good for Europe, and not good for the world economy, because all it does is throw workers in South Wales, for example, out of a job. They have less money. They won't be able to buy a Harley Davidson if they wanted to, because they haven't got any money anymore. So that's how the sort of cycle of decline works once you start messing around with trade and going in the wrong direction. So that's what I'd say about that.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Sean O'Grady, finance editor of The Independent there. And thank you, Mike Harris, finance editor at Veterans Today, spoke to us from Phoenix. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of The Debate. From Kovetawa, entire team in the Capitol, San Francisco. Goodbye.